Oh, welcome back. Oh, excitable. To Couch Managers Scouting Weekly. This is not the FPL that you're used to hearing from us. Oh, no. This is our new baby brother show, Scouting Weekly, where we give some alternative perspectives into the hot topics of the game and some of that real juicy insight into the world of football scouting from two professional scouts in the game. And for those of you who didn't listen to our first episode last week, how rude of you, but let us reintroduce ourselves. Firstly, I am Rishi. I work as the head of scouting for a club in Denmark called Næstved. I also work in the National League for Kings Lynn. Happy and exciting times on the agenda. But more importantly, the co-host, he weighs in at an unknown weight. He hails from Potter's Barn, originally from Enfield. He comes in hurt as the former head of academy recruitment at Næstved Bowl Club. And former Mansfield Town Scout, he is the current reigning chief analyst scout at Slazol in Denmark. He is Brian the Heffen.
Hello. These intros are getting more and more elaborate. Once I start joining and leaving some clubs.
And for those of you, if this ever, I don't know if this is going to make YouTube, but if it does, then you're going to see Brian and I having a genuine fireplace chat.
Oh, please, yeah. Again, we're on a late session. Like, at least
it's one of the most beautiful, cringy things we've done in a while. We've escalated that relationship one more notch.
it's getting too extreme now.
Goodbye, fireplace. How's all in your world, sir?
All been good. Busy as usual, you know, deadline day, all stuff like that. But I suppose we should say what we'll be getting into this week on the pod.
That's true. So the hot topic, well, a little bit late, but better late than never. We're going to review the transfer window. Ooh, particularly because there was a lot of big window, lots of huge moves. As we know, some that went under the radar too that we're going to be investigating into. Then we're going to mix in the beginning of a little bit of Sherlock Shaw. And ironically, we're going to be looking for Mr. Shaw because, you know, it's now going to be done by Brian this week. As again, we're recording at now is 12 o'clock. Nice. A little bit earlier than last time. And also then for our week in the world of scouting, and the juicy insight this week is pretty exciting, actually. It's real life deadline day. So what did the Hef and what did I do on deadline day? How did it differ? Were we busy? Were we chilling? Did anyone come in the door? Did they not? Find out later on in the podcast. And that's going to be all. Well, I say that's going to be all. That'll take us a little minute, but yeah. Anything,
and it won't be all. That's the problem because you missed a disclaimer once again. Me and John,
you fuck it. You know,
start some sort of coup or something just to.
So, like, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a sticky note next week so that I've got it on my laptop, ready in front of my face, so I can't miss this. But yes, you are right. I think I've actually already sworn, so it's probably a bit late for that. But just in case you do get offended by swearing, what do they have to do, Hef?
Leave football and stop complaining.
Don't tell them to leave football.
No, I don't know. It's going to happen here and there, but we'll try and keep it as long as possible.
That Brian's brutal enough to not even tell you to leave. I'm like, if you don't like it, you don't listen to it, don't listen to it. But then actually, please do, because we could do it with the listeners.
Yeah.
Anyway. reverse psychology. Anyway, let's do this into the pod.
You're now listening to Brian and Rishi on the Couch Managers Scouting Weekly Podcast.
And we're into part one of the pod proper. I'm just going to excuse my slightly delirious beginning to this with the fact that it's 12 o'clock at night and the first call was at 7:30 this morning and we still work it, baby.
The life of scouting. Everyone loves it until you're in it.
We should re-nickname this to the Nocturnal Scouts, because that's how we roll. Yeah. But I think we said part one of the podcast. Before we get going into that, Brian, what have you got for me? Where are we going to start with a little bit of Sherlock Shaw?
The game that everyone rinsed me for, so I hope you get rinsed for it as much as I do.
Hopefully, well, I won't, because hopefully I'll get this right, unlike you. So, well, just to remind the listeners of what this is, and you did actually get it right, to be fair, but just to remind the listeners what this is, so this is the game where Brian and I will ask each other, we'll try to find out a player, one person will be asking the questions or giving the clues, one person will be guessing. There are three clues scattered throughout the podcast. The person guessing, if they get it right on the first clue, they get 3 points. Second clue, two. Third, one. And obviously, if you get it all wrong, you get it all wrong. Last week, I gave Brian the hint of someone playing at West Ham and Arsenal, amongst other clubs. And Antonio was the first answer.
Yeah, but I shouldn't get too cocky. It wasn't a real answer. Everyone rinsed me for it. It was not a real answer. I just said, okay, I'm going to pick any West Ham player. And I picked Antonio.
I shouldn't get too cocky, because I'm probably going to balls this right up. But let's see. So.
I mean, I'll give you the first clue and we'll see where you're at from there.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
So, first clue. It's quite a big clue. And I've got easier ones after, as we should be doing, because the idea is that you eventually get it. So, first clue is he's born in 1990. Currently plays in the Premier League. He started out his life at a standard age, and when he left Belgium, he was playing for Genk. When he left Belgium, he was playing for Genk. He now plays in the Premier League.
Okay.
Name a Belgian player, is she?
I was going to say, this is not ideal. yeah, I feel your pain from last week now. I'm not going to lie. what have we got? Genk. Okay, I can see where Antonio came from now, because I've got absolutely nothing. Stanley, you've done that anyway, Genk. Belgium, Premier League in a minute. It's definitely not him. No, it's no. Is he? He's still in the Premier League, you said?
Apparently plays in the Premier League. If you get it from just that, look, fair for complaining.
No, I'm just going to pass. Rather than make myself look like a tit,
You're naming an ex-Gink player that currently plays in the Premier League, mate. You ain't getting away with that. You ain't chopping me up with Antonio.
You said Antonio. I didn't tell you the same, did I?
I was forced to name a player. You can't just like pass him.
It's obviously not. But you know, to make you feel better about Antonio, just purely to make you feel better about Antonio, we'll say KDB. I know it's not, but we'll just say KDB.
So you're saying Kevin De Bruyne?
Yeah.
Wow. I know that's not right. Well done.
Well, thank you for that. You done grilling me?
Yeah, I am.
Thanks for that. So I hope you all enjoyed me sweating profusely. I can see myself going slightly redder in the fireplace. I'm now blending in with the colour of it.
Happy days. I'll be honest, it gets easier.
Good.
It gets easier.
Born in fucking... I mean, KDB is about the right age, I think.
I knew you were going to have KDB.
Well, obviously. The other one that came to my head is not in the Prem. But anyway, into the pod itself, the transfer window, the madness that was. Let's get into that beast and leave that nightmare behind. So,
right. One nightmare into another. The transfer.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, that certainly is one way of looking at it, to be fair. Because, I mean, I think the first thing we want to look at is who do we think kind of won and lost the window, right? Mm. And I think How do we look at that? Let's establish that first, because we can look at it as which teams brought in the players that suited what they needed and therefore addressed those problems. Who made the biggest improvements to their squad as a whole? Some people might look at it as who spent the most money. We won the window. We put some peas on the table. Or was it like actual shrewd, smart business, you know? Say kind of like the old Arsenal model, the model that Newcastle fans hate, that Mike Ashley does, balance the books. But you know, some people might see that as good stuff. So I guess for you, who do you think won it and in what way?
I think I'm actually a combination of all the points you said with the team I picked. I've gone with Leicester City. I think they've done the shrewd business. They've got players that improved their squad. They've got players they needed. And, you know, they didn't spend pennies, but I think they, for Leicester, in the most non-insulting way possible, they spent the money that they would probably, you know, within their bounds, up to the higher end.
Absolutely.
I went with Leicester. Mainly, my main one in that is Vestergaard. I think that was just a brilliant signing. To sum up every player that Leicester signed, I think all of them, apart from one or two, are like ready for the Premier League, which to me is very important because they're a club that need to be improving. So if they sign like youngsters, it's not really helping them stay at that top level, because if they drop for a season or two, you know, that's them out of Europe, they're losing money and stuff like that. So I think like Vestergaard, Bertrand, Sumer, don't know pronounce his name, and Daka can all play a part in helping them, secure European football again. I wasn't keen on Lookman though.
I think it's a good squad filler though. You know, they're playing a lot of games. They're in the Europa League. He's going to come in handy as a player within that squad.
The reason I wasn't keen with him is just because we've seen him in the Prem, and he didn't do a lot.
I mean, his penalties to Fulham will never be forgotten.
I've even forgot that he went to Fulham. We've seen him in the Prem a couple of times, and he hasn't impressed. But you know, like you said, as a squad filler, you know, if they get in Europa League or Conference League next season or whatever like that, like playing in those games, then you'll be good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm gonna come back to this in a bit more depth, but I will say what I really like about Leicester, I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of how they plan. So when we look at that from our kind of scouting perspective as well, the Daka signing strikes me as really good long-term planning, because they know Vardy's got a couple of seasons left in him, but they also know his game needs to adapt the next couple of seasons. Yeah.
Instantly, as soon as I saw Daka, I thought exactly the same thing. It's a Vardy replacement, but like not this season, maybe next season, you know, he gets more minutes. Because Vardy's still a man, you know, you can't bench him. But absolutely. I think, like you said, Daka's a statement. Like, we're here to stay, and hopefully they put all their eggs in Daka basket, because obviously if he turns out to be a bit of a dud, they haven't got a Vardy replacement.
They're smart though, because they've now given him a full season to get to grips with it before he needs to be hitting the ground. Just so Leicester this summer, on those players you spoke of, 55 million they spent, and that was actually their net spend, because very few left in terms
that's
of fees.
Nothing for the Premier League, that's now, nothing.
Well, interesting you say that. So this summer, 1.04 billion was spent on 103 permanent signings, which was, although a huge number, actually 266 million short of last summer. So, and in terms of net spend, so that is the spend once you've looked at the transfer fees received as well, what was actually the total spend left, that's 593 million. So that's interesting. And I think, when we look at that, because we're going to come back to the teams and break those down, because I think that's spot on. But the most expensive signings, which we actually did as a game last week in the pod, in the other couch managers probably do, guys. So check that out, FPL. We're interested. It got me thinking, because the game was name the top 25 transfers. And I was thinking big numbers, right? Because although there's a billion has been done, you look at the top five signings over the summer. Grealish is a huge fee, 100 mil.
Yeah.
We got Lukaku, Chelsea, 97.5. Big money again. Sancho, 73. Ben White, 50. And Varane at 41 was the fifth highest signing in the window. Now that seemed quite low. So when I looked at the net spend, this is what I found, quite fascinating, because I know Arsenal fans are going crazy around how much they spend, and a lot of people get salty with Chelsea as well, don't they? I think Chelsea have a real argument to say they've done some cracking business.
Well, I was going to say that the difference between Arsenal and Chelsea is Chelsea signed players like Lukaku, which everyone goes, yes, he's going to be golden boot contender. You know, everybody knows Lukaku's going to come and do the job. Arsenal signed Ben White, who's still a player in training, technically. You know, he's not Van Dijk, you know.
Yeah,
and I think but if you just said Leicester spent, what was it, 55 million net on Vestergaard, Bertrand, Sumer, Daka and Lookman, and they spent 50 million on Ben White.
Yeah, it does tell you that
I think Vestergaard for me is better than Ben White. So the fact you can get him and a lot of other prospects as well is
it's a very good point. I think the thing with Arsenal is that the squad's been so depleted for so long, they needed to spend money. And you've got to look at what you can actually attract. Like, they have spent 131 million net this summer. And that also tells me is their assets to actually sell, they are such a poor club at knowing when to move players on and how. You look at players like Aubameyang that are now just eating up money and have done nothing, right? Lacazette's contract is up next summer. And the state I'm torn with Arsenal, because I think that 131 million they spent will make their squad better. You know, if you remove the players they brought in, they're not as good a team. So it definitely has helped them. What I think they missed, and I don't know if it's so much they missed, where Chelsea are just doing a masterclass. If you look at the net spend of Chelsea, despite the £97.5 million outlay of Lukaku, there's only £3.1 million net. Mm. Absolutely.
But Chelsea are like the kings of balancing books. They have like 50 players out on loan, which they can get like 5 million, 10 million, 15 million for. And you'll see like a load of names that they've sold. You're like, who is this guy? And they get like 10 million for.
This is it. And you look at some of the, like Livramento and Southampton is one of the smaller, those transfers you're talking about. Guay, I can never say his name right, went to Crystal Palace. 18 million with a buyback clause. Tammy Abraham, 34 million to Roma with a buyback clause. Zuma, 30 million to West Ham. Tomori, 25 million, AC Milan. And Giroud and Moses accumulated about 6 million between them. None of those players, when I've just reeled off, other than arguably Zuma, will really add any value to Chelsea's current squad. They're more than covered without those players.
100%. And also what you get with that is you get the fee, and you also get a whole massive chunk of wages that free up, so you can give it to Lukaku. He might be, I don't know how much Lukaku's on a week. Say he's on like 500K. All of those players combined are probably on way more than that a week, so then they can just balance the books again, even on the wage each month. Giroud's probably on a lot, to be honest.
And what I like about Chelsea is Chelsea are one of those clubs that have planned this assault for a while. And we spoke about this last week, and Brian, I hate to say you're correct, but I will give you credit where it's due, sir. On this one, you did tell us so. The clubs with the money were always going to benefit in these times. And Chelsea haven't just done it this window. You look back, they've been doing this since they signed Pulisic, who I believe they signed in the January before they were going to get the embargo. They were planning to rebuild this squad. Now, what Roman Abramovich is a very wealthy backer of the club. And he obviously put his own money in and can choose essentially when he wants to spend it. The reason why Chelsea didn't spend for years and years and years is because the market wasn't a buyer's market. There were loads of buyers trying to get the same commodities that drove up their value. So there was no longer value in the market. Last summer, Chelsea went in where there was huge value to be had because clubs needed cash. So if you had money to spend, you could start rebuilding. The likes of the Havertzes came in, you know, the Thiago Silvas. Chilwell had a really productive summer last year. Now, for whatever reason, maybe they put their eggs in the Tammy bag. Maybe they thought one was more of a nine than they had thought. But the one thing they've done really well, and I said this, that Liverpool and West Ham weren't doing it. West Ham proved me wrong, to be fair, but Liverpool haven't done it, is strengthen when you're in the position to strengthen. Chelsea won the Champions League. They realised, okay, even though we've won something big, we're not going to sit on these laurels. What we've missed, obvious to everybody, is that focal point, is the main man. Go and get him. Go and got Lukaku. He knows the club. He knows the system. And crucially, I think he's the, for Chelsea, the best fit of a striker they could have got this summer. Because what he does really, really well is play in a system where he's supported by wing-backs through Conte. And if you watch his movement, what he does really well is he comes from the inside, the outside right channel and cuts in. Sometimes even hangs out there in bigger games. And I think with Werner then coming from the left-hand side and cutting in, that will then create the spaces for your Mounts, your Havertzes to then burst through the middle. And you have got some dangerous, particularly with now...
He's the type of striker that make all the other players around him look good because he will just put away 80% of what they put in front of him. So it's quite interesting you say Werner. Like, obviously, he's got a lot of stick, probably more than any other player in the Prem. But if he starts getting like 15 assists a season because he's setting up Lukaku every week, then people are going to start seeing his praise.
This is it. Yeah. And would sell. Where did that come from, by the way? I can't believe you know. I mean, I know why we didn't. We broke the bank for Ronaldo. But what a signing right at the end of the window.
I mean, again, a bit like, what's it like, Leicester. Chelsea do what Leicester did on a higher level. Like, Leicester brought in players that they know can play in the Premier League. Chelsea brought in players that they know can play in the Champions League.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's no one's expecting Sal to flop or Lukaku to flop. Like, that would be a humongous shock, that rhymed.
Nice, the boy from London putting some rhymes together. It's exclusive. Exclusive.
I hate to do this to the fellow North Londoners, but rerouting back to Arsenal, a bit on that point with buying players to their level, I think the mistakes Arsenal keep making is I think they're buying players for the money they used to be worth. Mm. And my example for that is someone like Odegaard. Now, they had him on loan. He did very, very little. So you'd think that, like, okay, go and find another option. But instead, they just kind of get a bit lazy and they spend 34 million. But he was probably worth 34 million when he was a Real Madrid prospect and everyone knew, and no one knew where he was going to go, like in terms of levels. But like now, that he's probably just like, no offense to the guy, but he would just fit into a La Liga team. You know, like, if he was at Real Betis on loan, people would be like, that's a good loan for him. You know, it wouldn't shock anyone.
You need someone who's going to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. That's what you feel Arsenal are really lacking, aren't they? They've got lots of nice, neat footballers. They just haven't got anyone who's going to be like, right, give me it. Let's do it.
But I think I could say the same about Ben White, that you paid 50 million for Ben White when he's at his most hyped. Like, what was the harm in, like, because they signed Tomiyasu for 19 million. I don't know why would you spend 50 million on Ben White and sign Tomiyasu for 19?
I mean, Ben White is, I like Ben White as a player. I just don't think Arsenal really thought this one through. Like, they know when he comes in with that price tag, he's going to be expected to be the leader. All eyes are going to be on him, the scrutiny. It's not his fault, the fee, right? As a footballer, nice and neat. He's good on the ball. He's kind of like a, you know, your Stones type almost. But I agree. He's not what Arsenal needed. You needed a real, you know, brutal dude.
I'm more happy with Tomiyasu than I am Ben White. And take the figures alone. I think they could have just signed Tomiyasu and saved 50 million.
And to also the net spend, by the way, in terms of winning the window, Southampton, an interesting one here, having actually spent, they spent about 20 million this summer. They actually ended up on minus 25 million. So they actually made 25 million this window. So in some ways, they won it, I guess. And Aston Villa,
we'll see at the end of the season if they're out of the league and they haven't won.
Won't go into lots of detail on Villa, but I think it's very interesting that they obviously received the 100 million for Grealish, and they spent on Tuanzebe, Ings, Faye, who else? Birchall, Feeney, Ashley Young, Buendia, and Kyrie Pierre from Bristol Rovers too. So, money well spent, in your mind? Just a quick one on that.
I love Danny Ings signing. 25 mil, maybe, you know, debatable. Should you be paying 25 mil for someone of Danny Ings' age? But I think what he brings you is guaranteed goals. I like that signing. Buendia, again, 38 mil. It's kind of like you have to pay that these days, and I get it. Like Ben White for 50 million, I lectured him for. I will lecture him for 38 million for Buendia because I don't know if he's 100% worth that. But you know, maybe I'll be wrong. Because to be fair, Villa are the sort of club that if he smashes it, that could be, you know, another Grealish in what, 3 years' time. And if they sell him for 100 million as well, and they've made 70 million profit. So. Leon Bailey, I'm not 100% sold on either.
No, I like Bailey. I think he's a really good player, but I know we're kind of split on that one, aren't we?
Yeah, I like him, but I just don't know in the Premier League if he's going to have the end product. A bit like, I could see him being a bit like Nicola Pepe. You know, exciting to watch. He has loads of moments, but then on paper, when you look at what he's done at the end of the season, I can imagine he's going to be quite underwhelming for 30 million. But he'll be exciting to watch.
Yeah, it's true. No, it's a good point. I think it's interesting. I think they've recycled it well, I guess, because people knew they had the money, which is interesting. And speaking of recycling well, I thought just real quickly, kind of going to go under the radar, Palace did some good business. There are a lot of outgoings, a lot of incomings this summer. I think with the new spine of the team, using, I always get his name wrong, but Guehi, the centre-back, from Chelsea, Guehi. Yeah. For anyone who fancies correcting me on that, Edouard coming in from Celtic up front because Lord knows they needed a striker. Benteke just was no longer. I mean, God knows how he survived so long in the Premier League. but yes, that and Gallagher. Look, his goal against West Ham, lovely the way he took it. That little cheeky back heel, and then on the turn, the goal near post. So I think they've got some neat little players. Now, we obviously haven't talked about the elephant in the room, Man United, and we will get to that. But let's talk Man United first. So I want to end on the European.
I just want, as you're praising Palace, I want to praise Palace for getting Edouard for 18.5 million. I think that is probably the steal of the window. That is amazing, amazing business.
Ooh,
because he absolutely dominated and outclassed the Scottish leagues. And I feel like, you know, if Arsenal signed Edouard, everyone would have been excited. Tottenham signed him as like a backup for Kane when he leaves, everyone would have been excited. So I think the fact that Palace have got him, that's a cheeky little statement from them that people got caught napping and they sniped in for 18 million bid, which in this market is pennies.
I'm amazed that West Ham didn't go in. You know, they're just so light up front.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I think you can make a case. Even, you know, if they didn't get Dakar, like, if Leicester got him, I think they were even linked with him. Like, so many big, like, no offence to Palace, but so many, like, Champions League contenders and that could have got him, and I would have been happy for him.
Yeah, it's a good show, actually. And that leads me nicely to thinking, so for those of you who don't know, some of Brian's very early work in the world of scouting came from the Russian Premier League. So one thing I wanted to ask you around was, what do you think of West Ham's new boys that have come in?
Alex Crouch, my boy. I absolutely love Alex Crouch. People that obviously don't know me. I have been going on about him for years.
What type of player is he? What position? What are we looking for?
Centre mid. He can kind of mix it up because a lot of people will like, even like stats sites, will kind of list him as like a defensive centre mid, but you always see him moving forward and in and about. I could see him being like another Suchek, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, he has a position, but you'll see him pop up near the front and nick a goal here and there. He's not like a goal machine, but he's like a very like modern midfielder. I think maybe it's the best way to explain him. He's like a little bit lanky like me. So like he doesn't look like he's super quick, but he's got a bit of pace about him. Pretty young, Czech international. They love him over there. I think it's just brilliant, brilliant business again. And he's going to link up well with Kufal, Suchek, so he'll be right at home with them. They're all Czech internationals, so I'm sure they know each other well anyway. Vlasic, people will probably be more familiar with. I'm quite excited for this. I do think they've overpaid a little bit, but when you do dealing with Russia, you're going to have to overpay if you want a player just because this is how it goes. But I think he's good. I know my best friend Antonio might be upset at me saying this, but considering Vlasic has played up front before, I think he's a good little backup for that. And he can play out wide. So, you know, you don't need to resort to a last-minute Yarmolenko or something depressing like that. You can have, you know, a bit of width. But I hope he starts as well, because I think with those two both coming from Moscow again, they'll know each other, they'll link up well. I'm excited for those two. I think it's going to be good. And I know you weren't too happy with West Ham because you thought they could have been doing more considering their success last season, but I think this is like a Europa League strengthening in the nicest way possible.
Yeah, no, I think to be fair, now that they've done those two deals, I will retract some of that. I thought they were just going to sit around and let
them. No, but I think it's fair considering people thought they were going to get like Champions League last season. Alex Crowell could maybe be like Champions League level signing, but like Vlasic and Zouma, they don't scream like Champions League winners or anything, do they? So
it's interesting though. You never know. They do bring these guys in pairs. It's worked out for Souček and Gouffal, so you never know.
Exactly.
You never know. And obviously for me, Manchester United. Can't believe it's taken me this long to get to it, but I would say it's been our best window since we signed Lukaku, Pogba, et al. When Mourinho was here. I thought that was a really good window. And obviously it actually panned out winning us the Europa League. So I guess it wasn't actually too bad. But this time, I think we finally identified where the problems are and we've gone out and done something about it, with the exception of, and I am still really concerned by the lack of number six. I think it's very clear that is a problem. We got distracted at the end. It's like the Ronaldo came from nowhere, but obviously you're going to take him when the opportunity comes up. Completely understand that. I think Varane been crying out all of last season for someone with pace to partner Maguire. We've got that.
What do you think about 41 mil for Varane, though?
Cracking deal. I think that is a steal, to be honest.
How old is Varane now? Because in my head, he's always older than he probably actually is. I don't know off my head, if I'm being honest. Is he still like 20s?
28.
Okay, cool. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Because I always feel like he's like early 30s, mid 30s in my head. Just been around. That's decent.
My only concern is why Madrid just randomly let him go without a fight. That was the only thing that worried me. But he looked good first game, motivated.
They might have looked to their rivals, Barcelona being a sinking financial ship.
And in fact, the Wolves game is the perfect example why Varane was like completely necessary, because that's a game we had no right winning. We were dominated for most of that game. Mm. His defence, a lot of last-ditch tackling, body on the line, you know, he obviously learned the Premier League as a rough, tough, physical, quick league, and in that game had to adapt quickly. But you can see his value already. So I think that was a really good signing. I even think the undercover signing of Tom Heaton was quietly a good piece of business. We know he's a safe pair of hands. Should anything miraculously go wrong with two goalkeepers, we don't have to rely on Lee Grant anymore, which is fantastic. He's also Romero. Sancho, again, we've been crying out for a bit of flair. Someone's going to beat a man on the right wing. I think Dan James had the pace, but didn't have the acumen, to be honest. I feel like he'll do well under Bielsa because he'll be told where he needs to be.
I like that signing for Leeds. I was quite surprised. I remember speaking to you, but I was surprised that, because you were kind of happy James is gone, because I think I rate James higher than you do. Just through personal preference. But I think you're very right that at Leeds, I think he'll look a lot better than he did at United.
Yeah. It's because Solskjaer, you can tell, I mean, like I say, I don't know him obviously personally, but it would appear as if he allows his attacking players to create their own patterns. And if you're good enough, these good players, you know, the old phrase, good players know how to play together because they're all skillful enough to do it. I think a team in a Bielsa team, you don't have that freedom. You're gonna be told where to run, how to run. So, and I think just for different players, it suits, works in different ways. So,
I think getting 30 mil as well. I think getting 30 mil for Dan James is good money.
And the Ronaldo thing, check out our last pod because we spoke about it in depth there. But I did have one thought. And I've told, we were talking about this with Brian off air. If I'm going to get more goals out of Ronaldo, the one thing that I find astounding is for a player as great as him, as professionalism, as willing to improve, adapt, all the rest of it, he's so shit at free kicks. It's unbelievable, right? And at the age he is now, and with the mentality he has, because he's still the same dude, and I love that. He still wants to win. He still wants all the personal accolades, the team accolades, the goal records, all of that shit, right? So how do you do that? He's going to take penalties off Bruno, 100%. Call that 10 goals a season. If he, someone should just take him to the side and be like, yo, you need to change your free kick technique. And it's not even about someone at a club like Man United needs to be putting the ball in the back of the net at least 10 times from set pieces before the end of the season, and probably another 5 assists on that, at least, right? We'd love to give me you to be that guy. And I think he would take that challenge. You know, he's good. He's good enough and wise enough to think, I'm losing my legs here. I still want to get another 10 goals. This is another 10 for me every season. I think we can get that out of him. We could possibly get 20 set-piece goals out of him for 2 seasons. Yeah. Big if. He's got to work on those free kicks, obviously. But just
That's a hot take and half. Because people are like, Ronaldo's brilliant free kicks. And you're like, he needs to work on him.
His free kicks are shit. I love the guy, but his free kicks are terrible. The thing
he's most famous for is a thing he needs to work on.
I mean, don't get me wrong. That one against Portsmouth, one of my favourite goals ever.
I'm just like poking the bear. I 100% agree. He misses way more than he scores.
So. Yeah. I can't say I have a good stat to hand. I'm sure if I ask Brian, he'll whip one up in a couple of minutes. But
For anyone that wants to look, I think it's something disgusting that like even him and Messi only score like 1% of the free kicks they take or something stupid. It's pretty damn low. So. Yeah, you're right with that one. What does nick him off free kicks and let somebody else take?
Well, yeah. I mean, the other thing as well, the one I want to talk about, because that's all the Premier League stuff I think we're going to chat for now. So I think in terms of what I'm just going to throw it out there, winners, obviously, for me, great window for Manchester United. But I would say I'd still... I mean, it's weird because for all the money that's spent, I think everyone's still got a weakness, right? I think, as I say, United don't have the 6 that I think will cause problems. You can see a ball that's caused us problems a few times a season is when we're caught on transition and the space between midfield and defence, the space in that bank is too big and someone gets found in between those lines and it creates opportunities. So that's going to cause us problems again. I'm almost certain of it. Chelsea, having sold Zouma and not gotten Kouyaté, which we're all very surprised by. We thought that was pretty much done. Leaves them, particularly play 3 at the back, leaves them 1 short, I think, and central back, centrally. I think City didn't get their number 9, obviously. Torres looking great. I'm really, really impressed tactically with him, how he's going in behind players rather than just everything coming in front of him. So it's good to see that he's going to stretch teams, and I think that will give City, you know, enough between now and January. But, they still got that problem. Liverpool haven't really... Well, they bought the centre-back in, Konate, from Leipzig, 35 mil, which will help. Excuse me, their listeners. but there's problems there again.
I think you saying about people doing not plugging gaps, I think we've let one club under the radar here. And the listeners, if they support this club, probably been just like, cringing that we're going to mention them. Tottenham Hotspurs.
Okay.
They bought Emerson Royale, who, you know, I'm a scout and people think we know everyone. I could admit, when I saw that name, I was like, who the hell is that? And they spent 21.5 million. Troy's a great guy, but I've never heard of him. Pape Sarr from Metz, they spent 14 million on. Christian Romero, which is apparently a loan deal from Atalanta. You know, he's a good signing, but okay. Brian Gill from Sevilla, I've heard of before. Heard good things, but I've heard good things in the Liga. 21 mil. Gallini from Atlanta on loan, who I believe is a goalkeeper. Then they sold Moussa Sissoko. Danny Rose is out of contract and yada yada. But really?
Well, I'll tell you
what. I know it's working out for him, but like.
Well, it's.
I don't know about that business. I'm not going to lie. Especially the loan deals from Atlanta, it's like, why don't you just buy them?
Well,
I think it's less risky and all that crap, but like then you go and spend like 21 million on Emerson Royale and Pape Sarr. How are they less riskier than someone like Christian Romero? Surely you do the opposite, like loaning Royale.
I tell you what, the intriguing thing that I find about Spurs' business
That is mid-table business.
But do you know what? I'll tell you why I'm intrigued, because they brought in Fabio Paratici. I always get his name wrong. The Juventus sporting director, right? Now, he was responsible, essentially, for bringing Juventus back from the depths of shite. Now, for those of you who don't know, Juve got done for match scandals and fixing and all kinds of shite back in the day. Allegedly. And I say back in the day because I feel old now.
Allegedly, to any mafia bosses that are out there.
Yeah, so true. And Juve, I still love you as a club, so just throwing it out there. I'm not disparaging anyway. Hey, we all make mistakes. You corrected them. It's cool. Anyway, they messed up back in the day. And he came in, and you look at the transformation from when he came into what they now are, including things like bringing through a B team, focus on youth, a lot of young players coming in, the transfer models that he brought in, how they were even able to do things like, so Juve, where they really properly kicked on was by mugging us off of Pogba. Took him for a free, signed for 90 million back to us, right? And used the money from that to go and get other players to then rebuild and resell and all the rest of it. So that's why I'm intrigued by Spurs' business. I think I'm not sure. On the eye, as you say, it doesn't strike me as cracking, but I do trust this guy.
Very generous.
Yeah.
But you've been full of hot takes. Ronaldo's shit at free kicks. Tottenham, the next Juventus. Wow.
Hey, well, at least we've got some clickbait titles if it all goes wrong. And that, weirdly, isn't even the only thing I wanted to talk about, because the thing that I am... wanted to kind of get your opinion on, and this is more general, is Barcelona, man. I feel like we can't talk about this transfer window without talking about what the fuck is just what?
Like, you'd have two people from there.
I mean, honestly, one of the most mind-boggling things I saw an article of the, and this article was actually quite old, so this isn't even correct anymore. It's about half a year old or so. 955 million euros Barcelona had spent on players since 2015. Some of these are just boggling, right? They got Vidal and Churan, 52 million. They paid Griezmann 700k a week.
And they're surprised when they check the bank and it's like minus a couple of hundred mil.
178 million on Andre Gomez, Alcacer, Umtiti, Digne, Cillessen and Suarez. 180 million one summer. 2017-18, they sold Neymar. They brought in Dembele, Coutinho, Paulinho, Nelson Semedo, Yerry Mina, Delafu and Marlon. 551 million. I'm going to read you those names again, listeners. 551 million. Dembele, Coutinho, Paulinho, who was in China at the time, I'm pretty damn sure. Nelson Semedo, Yerry Mina, Delafu, Marlon. One of those is in China. Two of those are in Everton. One of them, is Coutinho still at Barcelona? Coutinho could still be chilling there, just eating money.
Well, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, Coutinho is still at Barcelona.
Having shipped him out to Bayern, who didn't even want to take him on loan and just wages. I mean, and then Frankie de Jong and Antonio Griezmann and Braithwaite.
And Griezmann ain't very noisy. Got back to Atletico.
260 million. This is the thing I was going to come on to. You do all of that, right? You overspend by €1 billion, and you still haven't factored in Lionel Messi into that budget? What? not only have you not factored in Messi into that budget, you can't even register half the players you signed. Aguero isn't even technically on the book still. It's some crazy shit.
Yeah.
And just so the rant ain't even done, Brian. And on top of that, let me give you some classic, just lack of logic. Atletico decided Sal... And this is the great Sal, who they gave, like, you know, I think Sal's on like a 10-year deal. He's on a really long-term contract. It was a seven-year deal or something they gave him. And it was supposed to be that the heartbeat of everything Atletico did. And all the rest of it. For whatever reason, that move is now on the table. Maybe he wanted to go, maybe they wanted him out. I'm not entirely sure. What I do know is Atletico weren't dumb as fuck to go, do you know what we'll do? We'll loan him to Barcelona. Yeah, because that's where we're going to let Sal go and find his form again. As Barcelona have literally given them Suarez and Griezmann.
I reckon it was just one of those things that, like, they knocked on every single door. And people were like, do you want to buy a Griezmann? Do you want to buy a Griezmann? Like they're selling, like, Avon or Betterware. You know, they're just knocking on the doors, trying to get the sale for Griezmann. They're holding him up. And then everyone's like, nah, we don't want to give him, like, 500k a week. And the only club that will was probably Atletico. They were like, yeah, we'll have him back. Probably for half the price.
I mean, what a sad,
Don't anyone that is, you know, not feeling great today, do not look through the Barcelona squad, because it's like you don't know if it's like a joke all-star team they've just rocked up with. It's like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Can you imagine being a Barcelona fan and thinking this season we're going to have Messi?
The Luke de Jong shirts are surely sold out.
I was going to say, thinking you're going to have Messi, yeah, Memphis, and, you know, one other. And then going from that, probably Aguero, I guess, and then going from that to Memphis, Luke de Jong, I know you know who the third one is. I'm genuinely not even sure. Aguero, oh, shit. Yeah, of course. How can I forget the man, the myth, the legend? Yeah, Braithwaite. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my. That's like a mid-table front line, man. De Jong, Braithwaite, and, I mean, Depay's decent, but, jeez.
Yeah, Depay's good. But if you take out Depay and you go, like, Youssef Demir, Braithwaite, Luke De Jong, could that not be in the championship? I swear that could be a championship front three.
I mean, you wouldn't even be convinced that championship front three is going up. That's the worst thing.
Charlie Austin and all in.
Oh, man. And there you go. Add that to the bold statements. Barcelona, shittest transfer business of all time.
Barcelona, sorry, worst Luke De Jong,
QPR. I mean, don't get me wrong. You look De Jong and Braithwaite. This ain't a slant on those two. My man, if I was given an opportunity to shit out to Barcelona, I'm in there too. But
no, but not even that. Like, they are good players in their league, but it's just like...
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not Barcelona, like Barcelona.
on timing, look at that. Just not Barcelona. Damn. And I think that's probably a good way to round up the window rant, unless you've got any other
way to make sure we never get hired by Barcelona. But if they're in debt, they won't have to pay us anyway. So.
I was going to say, Barcelona, we can find you value for money. These glasses don't lie.
How not to lose a billion? Maybe it's your email subject.
Well, how to lose a billion? That could be a good book too. But anyway, let's take a little break. Let's come back. You can ask me another terrible question. I have had some more thought about Genk and players that have played there. But anyway, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what happened in our world of scouting. Sound good to you?
Yes, indeed.
Let's do it.
Thank you for the transfer window roundup. And please don't forget to share and subscribe with your friends. Available on all major platforms.
And we are back. Back to reality. Back to Brian about to make me feel sad around the Genk players. Right, let's go into part two of Sherlock Shaw.
Indeed.
We get some music next to you, by the way.
Yeah. Shall I remind everyone of the first clue?
Remind everyone of the game. And the clue, I guess, yeah.
Oh, they should know the game, but they've been listening, they know the game.
True that, actually, yeah. Right, yeah, first clue in it.
So the first clue was he's born in 1990, currently plays in the Premier League, started out at Standard Liège, and when he left Belgium, he was playing for Genk. So that was the first clue. Rishi said, Kevin De Bruyne. Wow.
To be fair, Kevin De Bruyne did play. Kevin De Bruyne played for Genk, to be fair. And he's around that age.
He did play for Genk. But
I'm sure he went from Genk to Chelsea. Thinking about that.
Oh, no, I mentioned Chelsea.
Shit. Actually, hang on a second.
Is it this is, no, straight into the second question. You know, let's just leave on this even.
Anyway, go
this,
on.
This, I reckon this is going to rumble it now, but the second clue is he's played for Aston Villa and Liverpool.
Oh.
So this, I thought I'd be very generous with this one. Not gonna lie.
Aston Villa, that's actually curveballed me entirely.
Brilliant. Okay, this is making me look great. I got it in two last week. So.
I got it. Because in my head, I was thinking, well, I think I got it anyway. In my head, I was like, who's playing? Actually, shit, has he played at Genk though? Oh, he's going to fucking have to have done.
Oh, actually, I think of someone that you might be thinking of that would also be a bit of a curveball. I obviously can't say who it is, but.
Oh, that's.
I think there might be, there could be two that the listeners and you could think of, but I think there's one glaring thing missing.
I'll tell you options I had. I had in my head, I had, I know Ndidi came from Genk at some point, he's at Leicester. And I know that Bai came from Genk at some point, right? And obviously, but when you said Villa, I was like, music to my fucking ears. Then you said Liverpool, and I was like, not so much. Now, I forgot that I already battered this guy earlier in the pod for being a shit striker, and he will no longer be in the Prem soon, I'm pretty sure, because Palace have just replaced him. But I'm going Christian Benteke.
Do you know what's really funny? When you made that comment, I was like, oh, shit. That's now pinged in his head, the clue. Yes, it is Christian Benteke. As soon as you made that comment about him earlier on, I was like, oh, shit, he's got it now.
Nice. Yeah,
so it is indeed Christian Benteke, not Kevin Brawner. How silly of you to even say Kevin.
I mean, to be fair, and I'm not going to say this because I want the points. I'm glad you left me have those points. But what you could have done is let me have the third clue later and let me marinate on whether or not it was actually...
No, I was going to try and, like... I worded the third question weird on purpose. So then if you didn't get it with that, it would then make you think that he could be, like, some weird player that doesn't play. And it's just like, who is this guy? Because... So, shall I read out the third clue now, or do you want to hold on?
No,
you
might.
You've guessed it. My third clue was he's currently under contract until June 2023 with Crystal Palace. I didn't want to say that he plays from. I was going to just like mess with your head a bit and be like, would they give Benteke a 2023 contract?
Nice. Now, speaking of contract, that's a nice segue into what we're going to talk about right now. So, this is the part of the pod. Well, that was interesting. This is the part of the pod where Brian and I talk around our actual scouting week, journeys, lives, whatever's going on. And as a quick reminder, won't do the whole boxing intro again, but Brian and I both head up different scouting departments for teams in Denmark, and we both also work in the National League. Complete variants of work.
Fierce rivals. I mean, Denmark, technically, half an hour away.
That is, I mean, yeah. Funny that, actually, because we are left at literally kind of an Everton, Liverpool, Manchester City, Man United distance apart. And, yeah, we run both those two clubs. So his is called Slazel. Mine is called Nasved. I call his Slagalese because that's what he is.
What are you going to be interested in?
And there goes my chance of getting a job there ever again. But fuck him, I don't want that anyway. I work for the better of the two rivals. So.
Better of two rivals that steal all the players from us. Yeah, nice.
We'll get to that, in fact. So I think it's worth us talking around deadline day. So we both experienced our first ever transfer deadline day. And in terms of being in charge. And it was, you know, for one of us, well, two very different experiences. For me, we'll come to in a moment. But Brian, why don't you talk us through what deadline day was like for yourself?
Yeah, well, Dead on Day was pretty busy, as you can imagine. Obviously, we take quite a strong data approach at the club, or at least we want to. That's kind of how we're transitioning. That's kind of my main role, is to make sure we have data on every single player that we're looking at. So you can imagine on deadline day, when new ones pop up, it leaves us with lots of stuff to do. On the day, I ended up reporting about four players, which we were hoping to get in, obviously all around the level, can't name names, stuff like that. But yeah, we were hoping to get in four. We were hoping to get in two, but we looked at four. So obviously you have to have backups for, you know, if agents want to charge load, or I don't know, whatever happens. Maybe he doesn't fit or doesn't want to join the club. We have to have backups. So I managed to report on four, but it was a little upsetting that at 11:50 p.m., we were close to getting two targets, but I was told that the club we were hoping to get from didn't get their targets. So it was kind of a deal waiting on a deal, and the deal we were waiting on didn't happen. So we missed out on two targets, who I was told were from actually pretty good level as well. So that was a little upsetting, because obviously it's always nice to strengthen. But so I didn't actually manage to get a deal done on deadline day, but we got close. These things happen, you know?
Well, I think it was really interesting, because obviously we speak, you know, pretty much every day. So I think it's interesting to see how different things go, because we spoke on the last podcast around how deals, people really struggled to get deals done overnight, in a day, whatever it might be. Now, in this instance, from an outside looking in, I mean, it was hilarious, for one, because I'll tell you what I did in a second, but it was much more relaxed than Brian's day was. That's for sure. But the first thing that I picked up on is that it was a real early morning from nowhere. So we were talking the night before, it kind of had a couple of potentials in mind, but there was... It felt like nothing was really possibly going to happen. Now, for whatever reason, and Brian, I know we can't go too much into that detail, but the chats that you had with your manager suggested that there might be an opportunity the next morning. And next thing I know, I'm getting messages at 9 a.m. going like, shit, I've got four players to look at. And then get my recommendations and work out that which ones I actually want in my team and not.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I doing? Well, we brought in a 19-year-old... holding midfielder, can play a fullback, came at about 10 o'clock in the morning, deal was already in the pipeline, so I was having a cup of tea and just chatting whilst Brian was losing his shit by the sound of it.
It was just, you know, obviously, because I love the pressure, like when it's, you've got to get a deal done. That's like the excitement you kind of get into it for, as well, like, you know, the movies and stuff like that. So how it always is. So obviously it was extremely exciting, but then obviously you have to make sure you don't make any mistakes in your reports that you're doing. So obviously you're presenting it to like the manager and owners and stuff like that. And then it's always the, like you said, because it's so late, you're like, are these going to get signed in time? Obviously, 10 minutes to go in the window, we got a no. So even though we had backups, it was like, and the, you know, and we the, can't find a backup thing. With 10 minutes to go. Like, oh,
exactly. And this is what's so intricate about transfers. People haven't haven't seen this kind of stuff. And obviously, you know, the exposure even for us is ongoing. So it was cool to see that, not cool, that's the wrong word. It was...
Brian. It was real nice.
It was fascinating to see how that day kind of unfolded, because it felt, I mean, I was convinced one was in the bag at least. It looked like everything from a logical standpoint was ticked, right? The player had looked at, the data had been researched correctly, what you'd seen reflected said data, fit the squad well, you knew the lad had a good personality, manager liked him, board were bought in, his selling club were bought into it, he was bought into it, fee agreed, wages agreed, and the deal still didn't happen. And that's how crazy football can be, people. And that's literally because, as Brian said there, we can't talk about, you know, who the other player was, but there's another team couldn't shift somebody, which meant they weren't willing to let the player that Brian wanted to go. So despite every single other party being happy, including the selling club, because the club they wanted to buy from in this chain of events wouldn't budge. Nothing could be done, and everyone loses. So it's I mean, it does also show you, Brian, that piss poor planning gives you that.
I mean, I can't say too much, but
I'm joking, listeners. Right, listeners, and anyone that works at Slars or that listens to this with Brian, I'm actually joking with you guys. I know everyone's working hard on that stuff. But I think it was, crazy. I'm going to get us off the air in a week, man, but it's been a good run, people.
No, everybody knows you're joking. Anyone that works at a club will know that, like, you watch...
Yeah.
I can say I reported on, I counted yesterday, in the last window, I reported on 50 players, you know, and we missed out on about 45. So that's what happens. Anyone that is at any, even if you're, you know, voluntary academy scout at a League Two club, or whatever, you'll know that, like, you watch probably 10 times the amount of players that you sign. So deals just popping out of nowhere last minute will happen, but it's just another one of those ones, you know. It probably won't happen. I think you need to look at deals when you're doing reports and stuff like that, especially when you're new into scouting, and don't think like, oh, I can't wait to sign him. In reality, it would be nice if we signed him because so little deals happen from the amount of players you look at, and that's just the industry.
And as we said, there's so many factors that go into that, and I think that's something we can certainly develop and look into. I think, actually... Do you know what I think would be a really good one for next week? Maybe we should just pencil this in as well so that we don't actually forget. We could review how our summer business has gone so far for our two clubs, because we can talk about the players that obviously we have successfully brought in.
And we do have some successes, guys. We do.
Exactly. Yeah, because obviously the summer, the window's now shut, and we're obviously talking about deadline day in isolation, but there's a lot that's happened in between all of that time. So that could be a great one to pick up next week. And in terms of what you were saying there around the... lost my mic there for a second. Around the development of the kind of timeline of events.
Yeah.
I think, and how players, how we struggle to get players in if you're a scout. I think that's a very key thing to remember, that sometimes players you see, maybe... at one club, or even that you've seen in your day-to-day, will become good for another club at another point as well. So it's not like you've seen that one player, you can't get them into your club at that point in time, give up on them, they're terrible. Keep half an eye on them. You never know. You might even know. So like Brian and I, we obviously have a good working relationship, good friendship too. So if we see a player or something that we think is a good fit for the other club, and we know it's not what we're interested in, or a good fit for our clubs, we're happy to have that kind of chat. And that happens a lot in the scouting world. And we think it's really good if you have this kind of knowledge anyway, because it comes in handy. There'll be someone that want to do this stuff. So
obviously on that, because obviously we both have club loyalties. Like we don't talk about Target. If Rishi knew that my club could afford a Target that he wanted, he wouldn't tell me about it.
Absolutely.
You might say that you're looking at a player, but there's no way you give a name. And obviously I don't give, we've got kind of a one-way relationship, because I don't give you a lot of names, because as much as it's painful to say it, Rishi is at the richer club than mine. So if I start telling Rishi all the targets that we want, you know, his club can directly sign them. So.
He can, so, and will. We straight up stole. Yeah, exactly. I mean, stole is the wrong word. We signed.
Signed.
I'm trying to be polite to you.
We two or three of ours.
Three.
Literally our players. Not even our targets, our players.
Yeah, we took Christensen, Venzo, and, two, yeah, so.
Yeah. Christensen Wenzel.
Yeah, we're looking at... anyway, joking. We're done. We had some good business. So we'll talk about that business, though, next week, how we got to those players and... how in terms of the process, and then how they're now doing. So I think it'll be good to see what's looking like on the teams. And I think we should probably, Brian, have a little cheeky chat around our Kings Lynn stuff as well. So that's the data Danish side of things. Kings Lynn, National League. What did we do? We actually worked together this week, didn't we? Rather than pitting ourselves against one another.
I mean, we did the opposition report, and that was the second one I did this week. Just a quick touch note, I did do an opposition report for against... came from Ross Clyde, who are playing on the weekend, and I'm hoping that Should I say? Actually, I won't say. But I've put something together which I'm hoping that we use, and I'm hoping that it works and we score. So that'll be a nice highlight for.
You give us a bit more than that. You can't say something. What's the, give us a little bit more?
Okay, it's a set piece. Anyone, if you're listening from K from Ross Club, it's not a set piece. I'm lying.
Okay, so that could be really cool to review. Will that game have already happened by next time we record?
Yep, we're playing on Sunday.
Okay, cool. So that could be our other piece for next week. Well, that's sorted, guys. We've booked next week's session in right here on the cuff. Look forward to it. So on the scouting side of things, we will talk around how our summer business has gone and how Brian's set play went.
Yes. We can't be doing that near 5:30.
I was going to say that. And when I look back at the screen, I thought, I am not showing this to my mum and dad anymore.
I've spoken a lot about my outings and jaunts this week. How's your life been going?
What was that? Sorry.
How's your scouting week been going? I feel like I've spoken a lot about my week, and we haven't heard much about your week.
Well, the week's been it's been good. So actually, it's funny, on the back of the transfer window, I didn't actually finish that. So did nothing for the day in terms of on the day, because we already had the lad coming in, and that was done. So that was by about 12 o'clock. We knew we were good. And what we did do before the end of the day, we'll start planning what we're doing for January, which was cool. Nothing set in stone yet in terms of who we're looking at. But what we started to do is what we like to do is take a dynamic approach to data. So we like to try and look at our processes, see how we can improve them, what worked well last season, what do we think we can do with better. So now I was working with the big man. Shout out to Mr. Dinnison. Peter, thank you very much for the opportunity as always, sir. But we're looking at what we're going to do and how we're going to use the data. So, got a few things passed on from him. I've been putting my own little spin on it and then giving it back to him. And we're just kind of agreeing that going forward. So I'll be able to give you guys a bit more on that next week. I will say it's been a lot of man hours and work, but all good. You got to do these things. It's, you got to crack some eggs to make that omelet. And I feel like my eyes and brain certainly this week, and my mouth
and have become an omelet.
Yeah, literally. This podcast, you can tell people I'm frazzled. I don't think I've not looked at the screen for less than 20 minutes today. So we're actually into the next day. Shit.
Yeah, we are indeed.
It was good. But the Kings Lynn opposition report, I think that was really interesting. What I find interesting about opposition reports is the different kind of styles you get. So for those of you guys that have never come across one, your opposition report is as it sounds. It's when you will pick a team that you are analysing, usually because they're playing the team you work for, and then you'll look at their strengths, weaknesses, how you can exploit those, and what you can do with the tools you've got in the team. So that is the opposition scouting. Now, what I find interesting is the variety of templates. So I've seen templates, everything from 20, 30, 40 pages, all the way down to 3 pages, 2 pages, timestamping. So be interested to see what your take on the opposition reporting is. I'd be actually interested to hear from the listeners on what you guys have experienced and what you prefer, be whether you be an end user, whether you should be someone reading it. Do you prefer the more video-based, kind of longer in-depth things where you're looking into things really at their crux, or do you prefer that kind of pre-model where you're getting a bit more writing and timestamping for someone to then go and watch it? I mean, Brian, what do you kind of make on those things?
I think they all have their uses, but as I've been doing more and more, because often quite a lot of opposition stuff now, I like different levels. And obviously I've done, like you said, like the 20, 30 pages of information, but I am more leaning towards kind of like this, like the like 5 to 10 page length on reports. I like to mainly focus on like, not the basics, but like strengths, weaknesses, and where I can exploit. I spend like 80% of my time when doing opposition reports on what I can exploit, because obviously at the end of the day, if you know your opponent's biggest weaknesses and you can present them in front of the manager, then you're going to give yourself a pretty good chance to at least score a couple of goals, you know. Yeah. So that's why I like to focus a lot on that. And obviously, like this week, I've obviously seen something in certain set piece routines. So I spent a lot of time on that. I made like a little animation thing and stuff just to get my point across, because I think, like we've said before, like every course says, you've got to know your end user. I'm quite conscious, because obviously I'm talking to Danish players and Danish manager and a Danish board and all that. I don't spam them with writing, and certain terms I won't use that I would maybe talk to you with, just in case it's not a term that's used in Denmark widely and stuff like that. So I try and use as many visuals as possible, just because I feel like that's the better way to communicate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that absolutely does. And I think it's a good point around like the end user side that you said there, because I have, I think we've both seen it, where there's a difference in how some clubs like to do these things. So you'll have, sometimes you'll have a one person, usually, I guess, in smaller clubs, to be fair, is generally the one person that will do the full report. So what I mean by that, people, is they will watch the games they're analysing. They will then timestamp what the issues are as they see it and the points they want to talk about. They'll then include those in the format we've just spoken about, be that written, video, visual, however you prefer to do it, and then present that to a manager or coach. Yeah. Flip side of that is you'll have a team of people that do that. So you'll have someone that will do the timestamping, you'll have someone that will do the clipping, you'll have someone who do the write-up, and then between them, or possibly even a fourth person that would head up that kind of team, could then present that to...
I mean, I think it all depends on kind of how your club is structured, because obviously I work day-to-day with the manager. The manager is the only person I talk to at the club. So obviously, in terms of tactical changes, I'm talking to the best person possible. That's why I see a lot of like what I write gets translated into the pitch and stuff like that. Whereas obviously when I was at NASFED, it all goes through Peter, who's the sporting director. So obviously it goes to him and then it goes to the coach. So obviously it's a little bit of a different relationship. It's neither's better than the other. You know, obviously it's just the way clubs are structured. But I think that's also very important for, obviously, like, so if you had a team of people, I don't think a team of people would be able to work directly with a manager, because you'd have like five different people talking to, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think I was actually, when I was talking to Peter in the car recently, and in the time I was talking to him, he had 16 messages. I could hear the pops come through on his phone. And I was like, geez, no wonder. So yeah, that makes sense. I could see that too. And I do think it's interesting, though, that because you read like Unai Emery, for example, he wants 40-page dossiers. If you don't give him that, he's like, what the hell have you given me? There's no detail.
Bielsa.
Bielsa, another one, exactly. The flip side of that, you just absolutely know a manager like Mourinho, you could give him a tactical analysis, that'd be great, but he will have his own way that he's viewed. He wants to break that team down and will, you know, be more interested in that. So I think it'll be, and even you look at some of the, I don't know if Pep, because Pep is very aware, but it would appear he's more interested in what his team is doing than what the opposition's team is doing, and therefore would treat the coaching side.
That's a very good point, actually, because a lot of the teams I've worked for, you know, they're not like Premier League teams, so they kind of have a set way of how they play. It doesn't really matter who's in the squad. You know, they're going to play the certain formation, they're going to play in a certain way. I think, like you said, obviously with more dynamic squads, would you say that, than with like Man City, who, you know, they can play certain players in different positions. He plays like seven different formations and whatever. Obviously, he, like you said, is more focused on, well, what are we going to do against X team? I could see that making sense, like you said.
I mean, it's interesting because even, you know, I think as any team, top of the table, I think that there's a balance where you look at that, but it's how much you're aware of the opposition and what you're going to do to stop them, I guess.
Any team top of the table, any team top of the table like your team.
He knew I was going with that. Hey, everyone's spoiled for listeners, but as Brian threw it out there, it ain't easy at the top, baby. It ain't easy at the top.
on a sensible note, obviously, congrats so far. Obviously, job's not done yet, but
I obviously worked in Asmod. I still like them and I were rivals, but I still obviously want to see the team do well. And I think it seems to be going very well there. The business you've done, as soon as you were making these signings, I was like, good signing, good signing.
No, exactly, Nanda. You are right, but that's next week's topic. We'll get into that. Yeah. We will get into that. And probably, know my luck, we won't be top of the table by that point. Although I think that's actually mathematically impossible.
Yeah, that is
as long
mathematically
as I do it.
Impossible.
The only way that's possible is if we've slacked and not done this in 2 weeks and we've lost a couple of games. But anyway,
sure.
We'll leave that there for now. What do you think next week? Hot topic. Should we look at the internationals? Or maybe, do you know what could be cool? Here's an idea. We're planning on the pod, people. Why don't we have a little cheeky look at an international and break down one game tactically, one game from the upcoming weekend.
Could do.
Because then we can take a hot topic and put a little scout spin on there, baby.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Like you said, we're planning on the pod, so we'd have to give it some thought, but I think definitely.
Thought's done, mate. Done. Thought's done. You can tell which one of us two is done. Impulsive. Next week, sorted.
It's done.
Well, look.
That's next week's topic. How to make negotiations. It's done.
It's done. That's it. There's no negotiation. So, well, I will say thank you very much, as always, people. For now, we will stop chewing your ears off. I will also say thank you to the co-host. But before we go, I do want to implore you to check out Couch Managers Fantasy Football. Also available on all major platforms. You will hear both my crazy annoying voice and Sir Heffernan does appear as our game show host too. It is also my friend John, the couch manager, the FPL beast, beating me the last 2 years in a row. I will beat him this year, god damn it. But check us out there. And yeah, we'll be back next week. If you enjoyed this, please, please, please do share with your friends, family. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, 5-star ratings. If you didn't like anything, give us some feedback. But if the thing you don't like is swearing, then tough shit, because we gave you a disclaimer at the beginning of the podcast.
And still give us a 5-star rating, goddammit.
Exactly. And there's a very, to be coming soon, just a little teaser for everybody before we do go. We're going to be doing a new set of interviews where we actually talk to people in football on a one-to-one, well, two-to-one basis, where we will have a chat around how they got into the game, their kind of story, any experiences and cool stuff they want to talk about whilst they've been in football, and keep it pretty chilled. So it's going to be obviously based around the people that we know in scouting initially, but that's not to say that we're not going to branch out to other aspects of football, because what we find, I mean, for us, it's a dream come true to be able to work in football. And we know that for a lot of people out there, it is something that is quite almost aspirational. We love to do it, but who do we actually know that's ever done it? And what are the kind of stories of people in the game? So, you know, different way of looking at it. Be interested to see you guys think. If you don't like it, just, we'll know if you don't like it because we'll see the numbers.
Yeah. I'll blame the guest. So the first guest.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all our other podcast numbers are strong. So this is down to... No. I'm not that deep. Right. This is Scout Weekly, raw, uncut, and live. I am Rishi.
I'm Brian.
And it's been a pleasure. We'll catch you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to Brian and Rishi on the Couch Managers Scouting Weekly Podcast.